Hello, it is November 7th, 2017. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 7.8 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. Having the chance to talk to Allison, congratulate her, or congratulate Nizola, her backwards actual Astros fans rooting name, for the Astros World Series victory. We'll talk to her probably next week. But that'll be a fun show, but not nearly as fun show as the great show that we do every year with we do two great shows with this guy every year. It is, I say this at the beginning of every time we do this show, and I mean it every single time. This is actually, if not my favorite, one of my two or three favorite shows of the year, because I have Matt Norlander from CBS Sports, a college basketball writer for CBS Sports, here to preview the college basketball season, which starts Friday. It starts Friday. Matt, are you ready? I feel like I have been preparing myself for this since that somewhat kind of a little underwhelming last 5 minutes of the national championship game. I am ready for this, regardless of everything else that's going on. It remains a holiday for me.
Well, it's great to be back with you. Hold on. Let's recap those NIT picks, shall we? I have no idea.
Yeah, we both went out early in that one. We both went out very early in that one.
Yeah. It's great to be back. And it's funny you mentioned those like final 5 minutes. We'll get to the season very quickly here. But for whatever reason, those final 5 minutes almost went by in like a blur for me. And I'm like, you know, writing on deadline at the buzzer and all this stuff. And like, I think Carolina's going to win it. Yes, they do win it. But then there's like the hand out of bounds from Kennedy Meeks that I didn't even know was a thing. <'cause>, like you in general. It was a bizarre ending, different kind of, I guess it's hard to explain, but from the writer's perspective, when you're at a national championship game or, you know, for other writers, Super Bowl game 7 or a clinching game for any pro sport, I always feel like the final 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes of game time, or maybe in real time, it's like it just almost feels like it gets sucked up in a vacuum. Like it's suddenly it's there and it's like, oh gosh, now this is all happening like right in front of my face right now. I have to write. And it's a thrilling thing, but sometimes it can be an overwhelming experience. Do you feel that way as well? Or perhaps you're just more of a veteran scribe than me in that regard. But I'm always intrigued by how writers physically intake the culmination, the literal culmination of a season in a given sport.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I wrote about this a little bit last week because I was at that game 5 of the World Series, that crazy game 5 where everything just baseball just broke basically for one game. And yeah. I have to say, it was fun to experience and it was fun to write about. There's a certain kind of bake-off that happens with stuff like that where every writer's like, it's like this weird competition, which is not my favorite. Like, that's not really the way I look at writing. So there's this weird kind of like, who could do the best job of describing this experience? Like, I often find myself more times enjoying writing about, like, I actually wrote a piece after that game saying, please calm down, baseball, just calm down. You don't seem like baseball anymore. I know a lot of people love to be like Jason Stark famously, I think, is the greatest kind of single game recap writer of all time. I don't know if I'm that kind of a writer. I'm generally more of a perspective type of writer anyway. So when I'm covering, like, for me, however, the Villanova game was incredibly fun for me to write about. But to me, that was because, A, it was so unexpected. And it also felt like within the confines of actual basketball, unlike that game 5, which just was like a broken baseball game. To me, like the fun part of game 5 was actually being there. My angle on that great Villanova game was the fact that everybody was throwing the cushions in the air and losing their mind before the shot. Like, to me, that's always a great part of that Villanova North Carolina game, is before the crazy game winning shot, people were already going nuts. And for me, like, that's one of those great experiences of being there. Anytime there's a big game like that, I feel like my best work is more of the, okay, let's just take a step back and keep this all in perspective. And a game like game 5 of the World Series, there's just no perspective. It's just lunacy. And I don't know. I have a somewhat impatience for stuff like that. But maybe that makes me a bad sports writer.
Let me compliment you publicly right here on your very own podcast. But I actually do enjoy your general approach to those clinchers, so to speak, because you are right. I think there is inherently, and maybe it's a good thing. It benefits the readers. But sometimes, yes, we writers can get caught up in our own id. But you want to be able to write something that matches the moment, however you think the moment, how big it should be in your own brain or in reality. But it's always good to just also, you know, write for the reader, write for yourself, but maybe check a little bit of your ego at the door and remember what you're writing about and just the actual, you know, teams involved more than anything. But anyway, we're all already off on a tangent on what I'm sure will be a long podcast. Before we get to the games, I'm sure you want to talk about the huge, huge off-season story that had to be the Horizon League's realignment, right? That's what you want to
hit
on?
Yeah, that was a big deal. Well, you know, they're in trouble now, too, because they've lost Mark Alstark. So I don't know how that conference is even going to move around now. Though they do have Kendrick Nunn. They do have Kendrick Nunn now, so they have that going for them. We'll get into Illinois plenty later. Obviously, that is the big story, the FBI investigation. But it's funny. I have a hard time. I haven't written about this story yet, and I generally write about college basketball whenever I get the opportunity for Sports on Earth, even though I write about all sports, and I haven't written about it yet. And I was thinking, preparing for this podcast, I was thinking about why that was. And I think it's a couple of things. Number one, it just didn't surprise me in the slightest. Like, it didn't surprise me in the slightest. Not only did not, I guess it surprised me that the feds were getting involved, but the idea that this was happening was not only not surprising, it barely registered to me as news, which brings into the next idea of it, which is that I also was unable to get my outrage dander up on this. I had a really hard time. For me, on a certain level, yes, it's shady, and I think a lot of these coaches were doing things. A lot of times it seems like they didn't even realize were entirely illegal. But the common practice that I think clearly the Fed said, no, you can't be doing this, it's going to have wide ramifications for the game. On the other hand, I have a hard time getting fired up at where the way that, say, I got fired up about North Carolina. Like, to me, that was like a fundamental, like, if you're going to pretend that we're going to school, you can't just give them easy A's and move on. To me, that seemed more against the actual principle of all this. Whereas college basketball, if you're not going to pay these guys above board, they got to get paid somehow. And so to me, the shoe companies were taking the responsibility that has been abdicated by the universities. So while I think this is shady, and I think it speaks to like a general kind of rot at the middle of the game, I have a hard time getting too worked up about it, because frankly, I just have a hard time getting worked up with the families and these players getting money in the first place. I know it's going to have ramifications for the game, but I have a hard time like getting like, yeah, now we're going to clean up the game. Like, I don't know if the game should be cleaned up unless you're going to fix that fundamental problem at its center.
Yeah, we could definitely dedicate 90 minutes to this topic alone. I've discussed it plenty with Parrish on our CBS Sports podcast. I'll try and be as succinct here as I can. From a reaction perspective, you can't overstate how this rattled the sport, coaches, you know, just at every level. I mean, I got assistants in one bid leagues, like just texting me like if I've heard the latest, because they're just generally intrigued. Other coaches in power conferences who I believe to be clean, because honestly, I don't think that they would say the things they said to me even off the record if they weren't. Just want to know what the next steps are and who might get hit here, there, and the other. In terms of the ethical center, if there is one, or the debate, the moral debate with all of this, I definitely tend to side with you. Now, I haven't written about it from that angle just yet. Let's not forget that this is a federal case, and there are federal laws that the FBI is accusing 10 people at the center of this case. Perhaps it'll be more, perhaps not. I personally think that if we were going to get another big bust, it would have come by now, but I could be way wrong on that. You know, from bribery, and the fact that this is even an FBI case is because money was being exchanged over state lines, and that's how the FBI is able to get involved in this. And one thing I don't think I pointed out too much here is that, like I pointed out on our podcast and on stories at CBSSports.com, that this Marty Blazer guy, who was a financial advisor, kind of a cricket guy out of Pittsburgh, gets busted by the Security Exchange Commission, an exchange commission, and then he basically on a whim says, you know, they give him, you know, a deal, basically, what can you help us, we'll reduce your sentence, all that. And he says, yeah, this world of college athletics, man, there's some shady stuff going on, I think I can help you. The Wall Street Journal reported, citing a source close to Blazer, that this was kind of a long shot personal philosophy. He wasn't sure it was going to work, and it ended up working. But let's not forget about the fact that the FBI had to invest tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars in manpower and hours and all this into this to get what it's recovered. In some ways, that's remarkable. In some ways, I guess it's possibly silly. But what's undeniable is it has, you know, shined an even brighter light on the nature of amateurism and what the NCAA, as you put it, you know, has sort of abdicated its responsibility for. But I can't just shoo away the fact that there are programs and coaches out there that are willing to quite possibly break federal laws, but NCAA laws, to get players, while others are not willing to do that. And so within that frame of everything, Will, I do have no issue with the coaches involved, you know, going through what they've now been mandated to go through, not just the courts, but just the NCAA stuff. Yes, this speaks to a bigger problem with the NCAA, and that these players should be getting a lot more than they currently are. And by the way, you will hear a lot of pushback from a lot of people on that. I understand that I think that there is a push forward. More people than not think the NCAA should really modernize itself and its bedrock principles. But there are still plenty of people that think that a lot of 95%, if not more, of Division I, II, III athletes are getting a great deal. If you really look at their experience, in many ways they are, but there's still plenty of ways to go. Last thing I'll kind of touch off with here before talking back to you is, I think the way people have, this has been definitely, I mean, like this has been a story that I think has both captured the media's attention and fans' attention. But I think people do want to hear about the games and get into the preview stuff and just be excited for the competition. But this story, I do feel, will just hover there over the sport for the entire season, if not into next season. The next thing we wait on here, it's not necessarily the indictments, which Dan Wetzel reported are expected to come this week. And that's just, you know, that was to be expected. That was just the next step in this. It was just a matter of when that was going to happen. But, you know, who else could get busted here? When that might happen? What schools or coaches might that be? That remains to be seen. In addition to, you know, players at programs that could be indefinitely suspended, that still has not happened yet. To be frank, I am expecting that coming later this week. Remains to be seen. It is a wild, crazy story that I wasn't shocked by. I was shocked, like you, just at the fact that the federal government kind of just went all in on this. And I am personally fascinated by the obviously unknown identities of the undercover agents involved. I mean, I would love to know who these guys were and how they were able to fit into this world so seamlessly that the assistant coach and financial advisors who've been busted didn't catch any bad sniff at all.
Yeah, and last two things just before we kind of get into the preview. One is I find it telling that a large part of the conversation about this is not really about what the feds are finding or what they're discovering. It's, oh, who's going to get it? Who's going to get it? Who is going to affect my team? Is it going to affect my rival's team? Who's the best player that's not going to be able to play? Who's this guy that should be playing right now that's not going to be able to get into? We've already like immediately kind of shoehorned it into our discussion of the season, which I would argue is actually quite rational and actually quite normal way to do about it. Because, you know, you talked about those coaches having, and this is the second thing, you talk about these coaches having these ethical ideas, like some coaches won't be a part of this. And that's great. I admire their ethical bravery in that that way, I suppose. Except I have a hard time really getting too far behind them because they're getting all this money from shoe contracts themselves and the players are not getting any of it. So for me, it's like, yeah, you're brought big, powerful ethical stand is to keep a status quo that I find basically corrupt to these players anyway. So while I admire, to me, I look at a guy, we'll get into the Georgia preview, but I think Mark Fox has been quite outspoken about this. The coach at Georgia has been quite outspoken about, like, you know what, I've been wanting this. He's kind of a burn the village kind of thing that, like, you know, he hasn't said those exact phrases, but his idea is good. This is the reckoning I've been wanting college basketball to have. This is, I don't play by these rules that these other programs do. And I'm glad this is happening because I'm clean and hopefully everyone will be clean now. Now, on one hand, I appreciate that. Mark Fox seems like a pretty awesome guy and I'm definitely behind him. On the other hand, I don't think that his hands are clean either, because I don't think anybody who all these coaches that make so much money, and the universities make so much money, and the networks that make so much money, and the shoe sponsors make so much money, the idea that none of these money goes to the players anyway strikes me as so fundamentally corrupt that I have a hard time getting behind any sort of ethical stand that they may have. Like, sure, we follow these arbitrary rules that are corrupt better than these guys do. I have a hard time patting the people on the back for that.
Understood. Mostly agree with you when it comes to that. And I'll just, in regard to Fox, he's one of a few coaches, maybe there's been more than a few, that have been aggressively outspoken on this. Matt Painter at Purdue as well. And for those guys to say those things, I mean, listen, I've had coaches tell me similar things, but off the record, because they also acknowledge that, you know, there's a possibility they could have had an assistant that went rogue. And if you speak out about this and then it's uncovered next week or 5 years from now that you had a bad assistant on your staff that was doing this kind of stuff, it's going to make you look terrible. So you either just don't care if you're going to speak out about this, or you have supreme confidence that your program is so thoroughly vetted when it comes to doing things above board within the NCAA's rules. I do believe that Fox does do that for the most part. I'm not going to vouch for him, but his reputation would suggest that certainly. The last point I'll leave it with here is, I personally think that when we get to, say, 2030, the year 2030, the NCAA's infrastructure will be different than what it is now. I don't think it will be monumentally different, but I do think that what players are getting will be significantly better than what it is now. And I think that we will look back at 2010 to this point, you know, call it this decade in general, as where, you know, the shifts really began. But this 2017 story being one of the pivotal things that caused change. I could be way wrong on this. Obviously, the NCAA has hundreds of millions, if not billions, invested in keeping its operation the way that it's running, because it makes a lot of people a lot of money, and those people are not the players. But at some point, Mark Emmert's not going to be the president. People get older. There are late 20s, mid 30s, early 40-year-olds right now that tend to agree more with you and me than would agree with Emmert. Those people will go into power. And I do think that the NCAA is due for a change. And what we have seen this summer, this late summer, early fall story with the FBI, will be one of a handful of major events that catalyze that change down the road.
Excellent. All right. That's enough of that. Let's go get back to the amount of thought I'll be giving this during the season,
now
which is done.
That's the issues that kind of surround this sport. Now let's just toss that all aside.
Yes. That's the way I do with everything else. I don't care if the balls are juiced. It's fun. Yes. Okay, so let's go kind of division, go major conference by major conference before we get to some of the next ones to pop up. And let's start with, let's go the ACC.
Okay.
Let's go with the ACC. Grayson Allen's back, which it sounds fun, but really it's basically he's like the old man surrounded by freshmen.
It's exactly what he is. I am always intrigued by how, you know, I try not to stay in this college basketball bubble because, like, I watch college football, right? And I enjoy college football. And there's no one really in college football. Like, who's the closest thing? Maybe Baker Mayfield, but he's kind of beloved, too. Like, I don't think a lot of people hate Baker Mayfield. I don't even know who would qualify to be college football's Grayson Allen, who is as polarizing, or you know what, that
maybe Cam Newton back in the day, I think for entirely different reasons,
yeah.
But maybe that's as close as you would come in recent times, or I guess Johnny Manziel, I guess, would be the
Manziel is a decent one as well. Yeah, Manziel's actually a pretty solid call, but this was kind of a disaster for Grayson last year. I didn't think he was going to come back. He comes back, and now you know he knows what he's walking into. You know, I specifically have dodged writing these like redemption stories because honestly, like, what are we even talking about here? Like, just act like a normal human being and that's a redemption story? I don't think so. He's a really talented player who's going to have a lot on him. I actually think he has a very solid shot at being a first team All-American if he can avoid any trouble. And man, it might be hard to see it now. Maybe it won't be because we remember what last season was, but this every game this dude played, every play, every time he went down the floor on either end, people were just watching his body movement, waiting to see what he does. Duke is our preseason number one team at CBSSports.com, but I want to say something real quick on the Blue Devils. They, like Kentucky, have a real potential to go sideways here because you got a lot of talent, but it's all young talent, and then your only veteran here with Duke is Grayson Allen. There's just no guarantee that this team is going to live up to its number one seed expectation, number one ranking. I could see a situation where this team struggles to just stay consistently within the top 20 personally. Not necessarily predicting that, of course. I'm going to hedge right here. But I think there was a little too much of a FBI thing has Arizona now under a cloud of suspicion. Let's just go to Duke when Michigan State and Kansas were sitting right there. But regardless, within the ACC, Duke is considered the best team. I think at their ceiling, that's what they are overall. I think there's a lot of potential there. But if I were to power rank out the ACC, I guess I'd go Miami 1 in terms of who I think is going to win the league. Okay. Miami brings, now there's also a program that has, you know, some connections to the FBI case, although Larrañaga has been extremely outspoken against this and has total confidence in his assistants. I tend to believe that Miami is going to be okay when we get to the end of that FBI case. I think Miami is because of its league schedule, its talent. I'm going to pick the Hurricanes to win the ACC, then Duke, Notre Dame. Am I getting ahead of you, by the way, or do you want me
no,
to?
No, just... you go.
Okay. Notre Dame has Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell. And I, when we do these podcasts every preseason, I try and both speak to the diehard college hoops fans who knows who these guys are. And then people that might be like me that listen to your NLDS preview or your Dave's Iron podcast and are kind of just drop in on certain things and might not be totally up to speed with everything. So Bonzi Colson, you probably are aware of. Matt Farrell, you might be aware of. To me, those two are both going to be top 30 players. Bonzi Colson is a preseason AP first team All-American. He's got a shot at being player of the year. Mike Bray keeps him old. Temple Gibbs is another name to know. I've got UNC fourth. Joel Berry comes back. They lost a lot of talent from the national championship team. They will probably be respectably good. Now, Berry broke his hand after he got pissed when he lost in NBA 2K18, either to Theo Pinson or team manager. We still got to get to the bottom of that story. He's going to be out for a few weeks. When he returns, I think he could be the most valuable player of any player to any team in college basketball this season. Then I've got Louisville. They lose Patino. First it was the Louisville thing in the offseason. The FBI didn't overshadow that. It kind of ran side by side. But they've got David Padgett, the only coach from Patino's staff that is actively employed there right now. They've had Patino's gone and a former assistant's gone. Another former assistant is currently inactive. And so with all of this, I still think Louisville has enough talent. NCAA tournament team. I think Virginia Tech will make the NCAA tournament. They've got a guy named Chris Clark that you should be aware of. Buzz Williams is due to have his team. I think this could be anywhere from a 6 to an 8 seed, I think, this year. They're pretty solid. And then I got a little bit of a squiggly line, but I'm going to put Virginia above that squiggly line and have them in. So that's Miami, Duke, Notre Dame, UNC, Louisville, Virginia, Virginia Tech. I have 7 teams from the ACC getting there this season. That's a downgrade from last season. The ACC, which was good last season, extremely deep last season, not as good at the top as, say, the Big 12 last season. Overall, the league's going to be strong again. It'll be a top 3 league, but it's not going to be as deep as it was. Virginia, they'll get in. They're going to be ugly to watch, but Tony Bennett, I could be way wrong. This could be a top 3 team in the ACC, but I just don't see them having the personnel overall. And then you get to the bottom half, Georgia Tech, then NC State, Wake Forest. This will be one of the worst Syracuse teams that you've seen just because there's not a lot of experience there. You'll notice that with many a team. I talked about Duke and I talked about Kentucky, and now I'm talking about Syracuse. These legendary coaches are dealing with their most inexperienced rosters ever, so that's kind of a theme to watch. And then BC, Florida State was a 3 seed last year. I think they're going to just fall off the map. They lost 3 guys who left early for the NBA draft. Clemson and then Pitt. Pitt might be, it's going to be a battle between, I think, Pitt and Washington State, the worst team from a Power 5 football league.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's good to know. It's not,
That's complete. I think it's Kentucky and Pitt are the two youngest rosters. And like some small school out of North Carolina, I think, is right there. Those are the worst teams in college.
All right, well, I assume that inexperienced Syracuse team will lose to Lemoyne and will go to the Final Four. I feel like that's just sort of those weird things that they do.
I believe Lemoyne beat Siena over the weekend.
Hey, Illinois just lost to EIU, so let's not talk about those exhibition games. Let's not talk about those exhibition games. All right, let's go over to the Big 12. Really, the fundamental question is Kansas winning it again?
They're going to win it again.
Ah!
You know what? I'll be honest. I don't root for one way or the other. It would be enjoyable to have a little bit of diversity here. But at the same time, it's also remarkable because we will never see this again. I think this is like the 5th year in a row I said this on your podcast. We're never going to see any college basketball conference, and I mean any, have a team win 13, 14 years in a row its regular season championship. Kansas has done that a couple of years, shared it. But regardless, it is finished at the top of the league standings. 13 years running.
Good league. Like this is not like Memphis in the old
right.
Conference USA. This league is good.
Yeah, it is. And it rated as the best league in college basketball last season. Kansas has Devontae Graham back. For fans, they'll recall that Frank Mason and Graham were kind of the 1-2 punch, kind of a dual point guard system there. Devontae Graham's going to have sole point guard duties. Steve Mykhailiuk is a senior now, a guy who's been waiting to people. I mean, he was on NBA radars when he was coming into the program, and he has managed to stick around for all this time because he's just been he's been an okay college player. Now, can he be really, really good? I think he has to be alongside Malik Newman, who sat last year, transferred out of Mississippi State, was considered by some to be a top 10 prospect when he came out of high school and committed to Ben Howland. He will probably lead Kansas in scoring, I think. Kansas is going to go with a four-guard attack. Udoka Azubuike down low. He's a freaking beast. Billy Preston's the freshman to know. He'll probably come off the bench. Interesting thing with Kansas is I want to see how good Preston can get as the season goes on, and if that causes self to tinker with his lineup and not go with a four-guard attack. Devontae Graham will be in the conversation for first, second team All-American. West Virginia is the second best team in the conference. Jevin Carter probably has just as good of a chance to win player of the year in the league as Devontae Graham. Jevin Carter, you'll recall, is the guy with the receding hairline who took a bunch of bad shots.
Yes.
Lost West Virginia in last year's NCAA tournament. I think they're the firm number two team in the league. TCU has not made the NCAA tournament since 1998. They're going to do it this year.
I love Jamie Dixon.
Yes, coming off an NIT championship, which neither of us predicted, I don't believe.
No.
And now this team brings back basically everyone. It's not fully healthy yet. I do think the Horned Frogs are going to, and I know that's not like, it's not a program, it's not a team that you're not going to be like, okay, the first 2 weeks of college basketball, let me tune in and watch some TCU. Unless you're into college basketball, I get that. I'm just telling you right now, TCU, remember them, because if they wind up as like a six seed, they're going to be a team worth taking a flyer on to pull that upset off over the three. They're just Dixon has completely transformed that program. It's crazy impressive how fast that's happened. I've got Texas at four. Muhammad Bamba has a crazy brother who's been basically excommunicated from the family, tried to get him ineligible. The NCAA looked at what the brother was alleging, said everything was on the up and up. Bamba will probably be a top five or six NBA pick in June's draft. I think he'll be a top five defensive player in all of college basketball. You'll enjoy watching him. Texas last year was a massive, massive letdown. I do think they get back into the NCAA tournament with ease. Then I think you draw a line in the Big 12. I've got Baylor, then Oklahoma. Baylor doesn't have a lot of sex appeal, so to speak, but they're going to be good defensively. I think they're going to qualify for the NCAA tournament. That might be where you want to draw the line. I've got Oklahoma 6. They got a freshman named Trey Young. Unfortunately, the name Steph Curry has already been connected to this kid too much because he's kind of built like Steph, I guess, but he's able to hit 34-foot threes with ease, and he kind of runs an offense similar to how Steph did when he was that age or whatever. It's an unfair comparison, but regardless, he is going to be a lot of fun and will help Oklahoma boost. Texas Tech is old, but they're still solid. The fact that they're seventh in this league, and I could be wrong, maybe they'll be the fourth best team, who knows. It speaks to how deep the league is again. And then you got K-State. My opinion is that if they're eighth where I predict them to be, Weber is gone.
Can I ask them about that real fast as a Weber aficionado? It's weird. I feel like Weber is a good example. If the fan base isn't 100% on board with you from the moment you're hired, they're just waiting for you to screw up. Like, they rebounded last year. They made the tournament. They won a game in the tournament. And I feel like he's under more fire than he was going into last year.
You're right. If you're not considered an acceptable hire by the base, you got to start off super strong, exceed expectations to give yourself any sort of leash. It just hasn't happened with Bruce. I think he deserves better than that.
It's really funny. He is constantly getting fired from places where everyone says he deserves better than this. And I love Bruce Weber. I am totally down with the guy. I love him. I will always love that guy. But it does feel like he's just one of those guys that you admire and then you're ready for him to go coach someone else.
No. Hey, if he does get pink slipped, I could totally see him finishing out his career in a one bid league and
go fix SIU. Go back to SIU. He would be awesome at SIU.
Absolutely happen. That'd be a cool story too. He's the only coach in the Big 12. And if we can, yeah, he's the only coach in the Big 12 that's enters the season with any sort of like question. No other coach in that league has any sort of job insecurity at this point. In the ACC, if you want to include the FBI stuff, you can say Larinaga, Padgett at Louisville because he's interim, and that job is going to be coveted no matter what. They're going to have to be really, really good for him to hold on to that. Elsewhere,
is Oklahoma State screwed with Underwood gone?
No, actually, I think they've got a really solid coach. Now they've got Mike Boynton, Oklahoma State obviously had an assistant that was charged and arrested, Lamont Evans, and Boynton has handled the situation. I think of the four programs that lost an assistant coach to this, like literally had assistant coaches arrested, Boynton has handled it better, I think publicly than any other coach, and said and been more upfront than any other coach. And what's interesting about that is that he was an assistant under Underwood, just like Evans. And logic would dictate that, you know, if Evans was doing stuff, maybe Boynton would have known about it or been in on it. There is nothing to indicate that he was or that he did, given all that he has said. And given the fact that, by the way, Oklahoma State is the only school of the four to have actually fired one of its assistants. The other ones, but take a bureaucratic course, is that they're going to take a big step back. The Cowboys are, but I actually think Boynton's a solid coach. I think he's got a good chance to do something good there. But they're not going to be good, and then Iowa State's going to take a big tumble this year.
All right, to the Big East, to the Big East. Villanova, yes, heavily favored again, even though they've lost Hart and they lost Jacobs. They still have Brunson, however, former Illini recruit. So close, Brunson going to Villanova. Is there anyone else? I know Trevon Blewett makes it exciting for Xavier. Where does this conference stand?
Villanova, here's a little factoid for you. So Villanova's won the Big East regular season championship 4 years running. That's a record. It had never eclipsed three at any point since the league started in the late 70s. Now, obviously, this happens after the league splinters because of the football realignment. So there was a reason why. I mean, it was so competitive and so deep that it was, you just couldn't possibly expect to win it 4 years in a row. But still, it is impressive for Villanova to do this. And by the way, yes, I'm very aware of the fact that I'm boasting on Villanova's behalf for winning four regular season championships in a row when Kansas is going for its fourth. Again, that is insane. Jalen Brunson, I'll give up one little thing here. I got going on at CBSSports.com later this year. I think Jalen Brunson will be your national player of the year.
Awesome.
Bridges is the popular pick. He's so popular that I am very much impulsed to go elsewhere. Villanova's loaded. They're going to win the league. They're going to probably be a one seed, maybe a two, but I think they'll be a one because I think they're going to be so good. The Big East is going to be good again. It's going to be hard not to give them a one seed. We got Xavier second. Trevon Blewett could actually be in the running for player of the year. If Xavier winds up, you know, not stunning, but if Xavier's like battling with Villanova and they like tie for the regular season championship and Blewett averages 23-8-4, he could definitely be in the mix for player of the year. That's the second best team in that league. And then I think Providence and Seton Hall, they're really either or. Angel Delgado out of Seton Hall basically put up, I think I've said basically like 100 times, I'm trying to stop. He was very similar to Caleb Swanigan from a stat perspective last season, but got 1/7 the amount of publicity. If he does that again this season, he's going to get a lot more pub. Seton Hall is going to be even better. He's got a good backcourt. He's another player of the year candidate on that team. I think this league has three of them. So those four teams, I think, are pretty solid bets to make the NCAA tournament. Creighton, Marcus Foster could be a top five scorer in college basketball this season, I think. And they've got Khyree Thomas on their team, who's a really, really good two-way player. I think the Blue Jays are going to make the NCAA tournament. Then it gets a little iffy, but that sixth team, maybe. Or, you know, they lost Chris Holtman to Ohio State. They bring in LaValle Jordan, who's an alum, and they still got a lot coming back. Keelan Martin, Mar Baldwin, a couple of studs there. If you made me pick, yeah, I'm going to say Butler makes the NCAA tournament this season. That'll be 6 out of 10 from the Big East that are going. And then you got Marquette, St. John's. Some people are higher on St. John's than I am because they bring back Shamori Ponds, Marcus Lovett. Really solid duo in the backcourt there. I got to see Chris Mullin prove it. I have DePaul, and then I have Georgetown with Patrick Ewing taking over. Their non-conference schedule is an absolute joke. It's a total embarrassment. Even I understand that Ewing's never coached, been a head coach before, and like they want to manage expectations, and so it looks good to be like 11-2 or whatever heading into Big East play. This thing, it's atrocious. I just, even if Georgetown is 11-2 or 12-1, they're going to be playing the bottom 60 teams, like seven teams in the bottom 60 in college basketball. It's a bad thing. But the Big East overall, the big takeaway is that this league is absolutely sitting at the table with all the big boys and really has a case as a top three league in college basketball the past three seasons.
Which is surprising, considering not only that they've lost teams, they've lost coaches. Like, they've lost, like, top coaches out of this league, and yeah. they're hanging. Is that something – is that going to cycle out? Like, I wonder about, you know, St. John's – like, we see St. John's, we see Georgetown, we even see DePaul, and they sound like big names. But all three of them seem like programs where just the way the direction of college basketball is going makes them feel more – like Nebraska football. It's like, yeah, I know that there was a – I know that you have expectations to be this thing, but that's not – you're not – geographically or demographically, it's not the 80s anymore, and you're not going to be able to do that anymore.
Good comparison with Nebraska. I like that. DePaul hasn't been relevant, you know, in 15 years, if not more.
I know they play Illinois in the this year. It's the first time they played in like 50 years, and I'm terrified. Yeah. It's game three, and they're not very good, but Illinois is a mess. I'm very nervous.
Right now, you probably know off the top of your head, but I don't. So I have Illinois in my 1-351. I have Illinois 85. I think I have DePaul below that.
All right. Okay, good. Well, we'll see.
It's 85.
It's one of those Gavitt games.
106.
106, yeah.
Paul's 106, so Illinois should win that game.
We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get to Illinois. You have plenty. You saved your Illinois bullets.
But, yeah, you're right. The Georgetown thing with Ewing, if that blows up, anyone that wants to tear down the Georgetown athletic department and its allegiance to John Thompson for, you know, basically making the Ewing hire happen is totally within their right. And it could set the program back 5-6 years. But maybe it won't. Maybe Ewing will be great and we'll all be very wrong about that. But it is fascinating nonetheless. I just don't think that team is anywhere close to being NCAA tournament quality. Like, they aren't going to make the 2018 tournament. They're not going to make the 2019 tournament. Maybe they can make the 2020 tournament.
All right, let's go to the Pac-12. Arizona is obviously the story of this league, and we can get to them in a moment because I really want to find out. I listened to your and Gary Parrish's podcast. There's discussion of, like, who's actually going to be able to play for Arizona, who's suspended, who's unofficially they're not going to put in, and obviously Arizona under that as well. I find USC really impressive. I remember when I felt like Andy Enfield was one of those guys that got hot and popular and viral because of his wife and because of that team was being so fun during the NCAA tournament. And maybe was a little ambitious hire to turn USC around, but they're awesome. Like, they're really good. Is Arizona clearly the best team, or can USC make a jump up if Arizona maybe, say, has some of their stars that aren't going to be able to play?
Yeah, well, let's also keep in mind that USC has had an assistant charge as well. These are the top two teams projected in the Pac-12. So, I mean, I'll try and be as forthcoming as I can in a public manner here, but I do anticipate that Arizona and USC will both have, at least should, both have at least one player apiece on their roster sitting to start the season. If it doesn't, it's got to be coming eventually. If not,
they put themselves in danger if they play these guys.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And it turns out that they're ineligible.
Yeah. Now, maybe they're going to roll the dice there. I don't know. There's also, see... And I'm not going to slip too far down this rabbit hole. But the other thing in play here is that sometimes with these recruitments, it's not the players that are even really that aware of what's happening. It can truly be happening above the head of the recruits in question. So even if you do your research as an athletic department and with your compliance office, you could, in theory, realistically, not uncover something that would then come to light later. That possibility is out there. But there's too much there surrounding Arizona and USC and its assistants. You got to think that more is coming. Talent-wise, there is a big gap between these two programs and the rest of the Pac-12. Arizona is just healthy, crazy loaded. Alonzo Trier, probably a top 10 player in college basketball. DeAndre Ayton, I think, will be a top 10 player in college basketball. He will maybe be the best defensive player in college basketball. His one knock is, like, he doesn't always try hard. And that can really be frustrating. Sometimes you see someone who's, like, so amazingly good, and you're like, why don't you care more? But then again, he's a big man. And sometimes big men have this mercurial streak when it comes to playing basketball because they just happen to be tall. And so it's like, yeah, you should go do that. But when he tries, he's really, really good. Raleigh Alkins, Parrish put it out there that he's not only injured, but he could be the player in question that might have an eligibility issue if we don't hear anything from Arizona. And he already happens to be injured. We'll see. Alkins is set up when healthy to be a top 25 player in the game, in my opinion. I talked to Sean Miller about him in July, and he was very high. Like, you'll talk to these coaches on the recruiting trail about their seasons, off seasons, how things are going. A lot of it's the same old typical stuff. And then occasionally you'll just get a coach that'll be like, hey, listen, man, you know, just call me in January and we're going to be talking about my guy. I'm just telling you right now. And with Sean, it was a lot of that with Raleigh. And there's other veterans, Dusan Ristic, Parker Jackson Cartwright, who were on the point for Arizona. USC's talent. Jordan McLaughlin is probably a top 12 point guard in college hoops. Chimezie Metu and Benny Boatwright are terrific down low. Shaquan Aaron, former Louisville Cardinal. He's a wing that can come off the bench or start either way. D'Anthony Melton. I don't know. Hold on. Let me bring this up because I'm right. The stat is insane. And Parrish wrote about it. It was out there. All right. So Melton averaged. This is like you can kind of make stats do whatever you want with them. But D'Anthony Melton, who I think I was higher on him last year as a freshman than anyone, he averaged 4.7 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.9 steals, and one block per game last season. He is the second freshman since 1993 to average 4.7 boards, 3.5 assists, 1.9 steals, and one block. The only other one to do it. Do you have any sort of, or maybe you read the story, read our
talk. I didn't see the piece. No. Go.
The only other player is Dwayne Wade.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of an insane stat. Melton's really, really good. He's really talented. USC, it's hard not to love their talent. They do have the ability to win a national championship. They are the highest ranked team that is not normally ranked in like a preseason top 25. Right. You get one or two of those a year. Teams that kind of slip in there, the top 10, top 15. USC is one of them. Real quick, the rest of the Pac-12. Oregon, they went to the Final Four last year, lost their three best players to early NBA draft entry. They still bring back enough, including Peyton Pritchard, who's going to be good. Troy Brown's a freshman named No. And then they've got two transfers, Mikhail McIntosh from Illinois State. And then you've got Elijah Brown out of New Mexico. Oregon has enough there where they can make it pretty interesting in the Pac-12. I just don't think they have quite enough there to compete with the top two. UCLA lost Lonzo Ball. LiAngelo Ball comes in. He's not going to start. I think he'll just be a whatever player. I don't even think we're going to be talking about him other than if his dad says some stupid stuff throughout the season, which is probably inevitable.
It's a tough spot for that kid.
I know it is. And perhaps there's something to be written about him. He's fairly quiet. I think he's different than his other two brothers. Although LiAngelo doesn't really, LaMelo doesn't say anything too much to the press, but apparently he's just like, not a wild child, but he's just like, he shows who he is when like there's, you know, cameras and writers not around. LiAngelo is just, just a different kind of guy. And he's also not nearly as good at basketball as other two brothers. He's a little bit fascinating on his own. UCLA has Jalen Hands coming in to play the point. He's going to be awesome. Aaron Holiday will also play the point. He took a bench role last year, so Bryce Alford and Lonzo Ball could kind of run that offense. Aaron Holiday is going to be a stud. They also got a guy named Prince Ali, who, will be subject to many a Disney here. Stanford is going to be much better from last year. Reed Travis might steal player of the year in the Pac-12. If Stanford winds up as a top four team, he does what he did last year to an even better degree. Keep an eye on him. Then I think you draw a line. Those are only teams that are really looking at NCAA tournament bids. Arizona State, Oregon State, Colorado, Utah, Washington, Cal, Washington State is how I flush out the rest of the Pac-12. And I think there's a firm distance, a firm gap between Stanford and ASU.
All right, we're going to get to – I'm going to end with the Big Ten and the SEC. So let's go through any other conferences that you think would have – let's not do two-bid conferences. Are there any other conferences that get three bids? Is the American, Wichita State, obviously moving to the American. Yeah. They're still good. Do they have three teams? And if not, does anybody else – or if so, does anybody else?
Yeah, I fully encourage you to endorse my term of the major seven, because college basketball has seven major conferences now. I think it will take probably this season for the American to show itself well, for more people to realize this, because people think like the Power Five for fall, and the Big East is really good in basketball. The American is going to be good. I think it will probably be better than one of the other major conferences this season. Probably finishes a top six conference. It's going to get three teams. I'm guaranteeing it. Cincinnati could be a top 10 team. Wichita State, we think, is a top 10 team. UCF made the NIT Final Four last season. Who doesn't know that, right? They bring back a ton, including 7'6" Taco Fall. I think they'll be in the tournament. I think UConn will have a huge bounce back year if everyone is healthy. I think UConn will get back to the NCAA tournament. If that does not happen, look for a lot of calls for Kevin Ollie's job. They've got too much talent not to be an NCAA tournament team this season. And then SMU still has a really good shot. They actually have the preseason player of the year in Shake Milton. I'm a little hazy on that. Give me four bids for the American with SMU coming really close. Houston not too far behind. Then you go Temple, Tulsa, East Carolina, Memphis. Memphis is unusually down this season. They'll bump back up. But when you look at Wichita State having joined the league, and you've got historically proud programs like Cincinnati, UConn, Temple, Memphis, even Houston was awesome in the 80s. I think there's a legitimate case for the American to be a top seven league in all college basketball. And that's seven to separate itself from the rest of the sport. Real quick on the top two teams, though. Cincinnati is going to have its best offensive team in a very, very, very long time. This team will probably be able to stand up to some of the Peak Huggins teams, say for that team with Kenny Martin when he hurt himself and was on pace for a one seed. Wichita State has Landry Shamet, who will be in the running for player of the year if the Shockers live up to their expectations. They have their starting five back from last season when they were an awesome, terrific team. They got some injuries. Give them till mid-December for them to be at full strength. Otherwise, there is no other conference out there that I think is going to be a sure thing for three bids. The A-10 you could certainly look at. URI brings back a ton. They made the tournament last season. Rhode Island will be really good to be the best team in the A-10. St. Bonaventure has a point guard named Jalen Adams. UConn also has a point guard named Jalen Adams. They're not spelled the same. They're all both very good. St. Bonaventure's Jalen Adams is better than UConn's Jalen Adams. Jalen Adams from Bonaventure is going to be in the NBA. I think he's a fantastic point guard. They'll make the tournament, I think. VCU might be that third team out of the A-10 that can crack through there. That league could really use not just a lot of teams getting to the tournament, but like URI making a Sweet 16 and another team winning at least a game. It could go a real long way. And then before we finish up with the two big leagues, let me just give you a few teams here to keep an eye on now. Remember this podcast, people. These are the teams come the NCAA tournament. When we do this tournament preview thing, I'm going to be talking about them again. Here are the best teams from single-bid leagues, in my opinion. Although the Mountain West might not be a single-bid league. The West Coast Conference are not single-bid leagues, but you get what I'm saying. So we already know Gonzaga's going to be good. St. Mary's will be good again. People think St. Mary's is going to be better than Gonzaga this year because they bring a lot back. But let's talk mid-majors here. Oakland's probably the best mid-major program in the country this season, mid-major team. They got a lot back. Greg Campy does a great job there. If Oakland is really, really good and gets to the tournament, Greg Campy deserves a shot. One shot.
And Kendrick Nunn, former Illini Kendrick Nunn on that team.
Absolutely. Kendrick Nunn is right there with Jalen Hayes on that team. They are fantastic. That's a fantastic group. I think it's genuinely a top 50 team in college basketball. Charleston out of the CAA is also really, really good up there. Keep an eye on them. Bucknell out of the Patriot should be pretty damn good. Grand Canyon knows all about them. Out of the WAC, they're going to be awesome.
And they're eligible this year, right? This is their first year they're eligible?
Yes. This is the first year they're eligible to make the tournament.
Just to remind everyone, I've written about this. You should look up my piece about this. This is a for-profit school. This is a for-profit school trying to get the NCAA tournament. That's where we are now.
It's just...
it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. That's absolutely crazy. And their games are really fun. Remember that video it's a great atmosphere. It's just a for-profit school that could make the NCAA tournament this year.
Coached by Dan Marley, by the way.
Thunder Dan.
Gonzaga's going to get back to the tournament with ease. St. Mary's, I think Gonzaga will win the league, but St. Mary's is favored to win the league. And then Vermont out of the America East is going to be good again. They made the tournament last year. I think they'll be back. Gulf Coast, Dunk City should win the Atlantic Sun. So a lot of familiar names from a mid-major perspective should be good again. Man, just talking about this, though, gets me so psyched and amped for the season. I'm so happy that we are just only days away here. So let's hit on these final two leagues.
Yes, final two leagues. We'll start with the SEC. Got to win the Big Ten last. It's very funny. We'll get into Georgia in a moment. I'd like to note that I always buy the monthly magazines. Like Lindy's magazine came out and had Georgia number 19. 19 in the country. I have them 19 in the country. No one else has them that high, to say the least. But you can make an argument that they do have the preseason SEC player of the year, maybe?
Uh-huh. Yante Mate, maybe. He's awesome. He's Dude, he's really, really good.
He's totally a Michigan guy. Like, he feels like a Michigan State player. They recruited him. He's from Michigan. He feels like a total Michigan State player.
Yeah, we rank Mate number 22 in the country on our list of the top 101 players in college basketball. I've got Georgia 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in the SEC.
This league looks pretty tough.
All right, here's the deal with the SEC. This league, people have been expecting this league to be a lot better for like 4 years in a row. It hasn't happened. If it doesn't happen this year, when the hell is it going to happen? You got too much talent. The rosters are in place. Here's how I see it shaking out. Kentucky is the favorite. I got Florida winning this thing. They're going to have the best defensive team in the conference. Came really close to making the Final Four last year. They got Keevon Allen back. He'll compete with Mayton for SEC Player of the Year, I think. Chris Chioza, who hit that incredible buzzer beater to knock off Wisconsin, he's back. They're missing a big guy right now, Igbunu, who's going to be out, I think, until early December. But at full strength, I like Mike White's coaching, their personnel, their experience, their backcourt to win the SEC. Number two, Texas A&M, who has a very tough SEC schedule. Maybe they don't. I'm going to take them to finish second, even despite that. Robert Williams will probably be a top 15 NBA pick. Tyler Davis will probably be a top five big man in terms of rebounding and block shots. DJ Hogue is a stretch 3/4. The backcourt's going to be better than last season. A&M, we should have in our preseason top 25-1, but GP opted not to do that, so I have them ranked 27th. I do think they're more along the lines of the 17th or 18th best team in the country overall. And then I've got Kentucky third. I wrote this whole thing on Kentucky late last week at CBSSports.com. They have had young teams, obviously. And we always talk about Calipari and these young dudes, and they're going one and done. They're going to the NBA. They're a lot of fun. He gets these guys. It's incredible what he does, you know, whatever. It's all true. It's all true. But they have had many instances where in the midst of a season, Calipari's teams have struggled, not been what was expected. They once went to the NIT after winning a national championship, albeit that happened when Nerlens Noel got injured at Florida. And
Is that the year they lost to Robert Morris?
You know it.
Yeah. And they're on the road. They're on the road, right?
Yes. Because awesome. Kentucky didn't think it was going to
happen. Yeah, like the way that Illinois always puts
like
the road.
Like,
yeah.
Rupp was booked for something.
Yeah, like the Cirque du Soleil is always at the State Farm Center during Illinois, so they always miss it.
Deliciously ironic about all that is that, you know, Robert Morris is basically right outside Pittsburgh, and that's where Calipari grew up and was from. So it was always this interesting little twist that they had to play Robert Morris. And then they had to go to Pittsburgh, and then Cal got beat in his own backyard there. But the bigger point I'm making is that Kentucky has had teams that have underachieved and then gotten their act together and made good runs in the tournament. The teams that have underachieved or faced issues with shooting, this team is not going to be able to shoot three-pointers, have always had either John Wall, De'Aaron Fox, Marcus Teague, or they've had one or two really – really good junior senior starters. This team has none of that. It is crazy young. It's overloaded with power wings, and I just am not yet convinced that Kentucky is a top 20 team. Kentucky fans think I hate their program. I don't. I really don't. It's a lot of fun to be able to write about Kentucky a lot because there's always something interesting about what's happening there, or something interesting that Kyle is saying. Got them firmly third, by the way, and then I think there's a significant drop off in the SEC. Arkansas, which made the tournament last year, at 4. Alabama at 5. They've got Colin Sexton, who is, listen, the Alabama football team is a boring slog of a machine to watch. I get no joy out of watching Alabama play football. It's the weirdest thing ever where you have this super dominant team in sports, and it's just nothing. Like, the Patriots are kind of the same way, but even then, like, you'll marvel at, like, Brady's ultimate ability, and they've got Gronk, so there's stuff there. With Bama, it's none of that. Like, OJ Howard's the only interesting thing about Alabama's football team from my perspective. Maybe you disagree vastly on me with that, but it's just like, ugh, what I'm getting at. Colin Sexton will make up for all of that because he is this super dazzling lightning quick point guard who has Alabama basketball expectations as high as they have been in a long time. He's not the only really good player. They're bringing back some good sophomores, and there's this freshman named John Petty. So I've got Bama 5, Missouri 6. Now, remember how bad Missouri was last season? They won 8 games. Got Michael Porter Jr. in the roster, among other talents. Quanzo Martin takes over. He's a really good defensive coach. I do think it's reasonable for Missouri fans to expect to get to the NCAA tournament. So right now we are at 1-2.
You know, they better make it. Let's have a little moment on Missouri, because like this, like it's hard to imagine them getting Missouri. Like, listen, I think they did a good job with that class. They're Illinois' rival, so I'm always going to be a little skeptical. But it's hard to imagine them possibly getting a better recruiting class ever, really, than what they got this year. I mean, they literally had to hire Porter's dad to get him over here, and then Tillman comes over. They've got stuff. If they don't make a tournament this year, and listen, Martin just got. Like, Martin got chased off, man. Like, Martin is not a guy that's been, like, beloved. If they don't make it this year, I mean, Porter's gone. I mean, I know he's joked about coming back, but he ain't coming back for a second year. So after that, I don't know. I find myself skeptical of the Missouri thing. Obviously, I can't put my own personal feelings on that aside. But I find their excitement level for that team now seems disproportionate for a team that has a ton of questions and a coach that has recruited okay in the past, but keeps getting run off of places.
Yeah. Here's the thing with Missouri in Quanzo and this recruiting class. He's never going to have a better class with a centerpiece to it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like Mizzou maybe he strikes gold and they start recruiting on a great level. But literally, because Michael Porter is from the area and because his dad used to coach on the women's staff and because Washington fired Lorenzo Romar and because Martin rightfully hired Porter's dad to the staff, that's why Michael Porter is playing for the Tigers. So if you're a top five prospect in a given year, you're not going to go and play for Missouri. This is a one-time only thing. So it sets up interesting expectations in his first season in regard to that, but it's also kind of a one-time only experiment. So if this doesn't work, Martin also has a little bit of something in his back pocket of, you know, Michael was a special talent. We can kind of recruit specifically for the style that we need, because Porter's game and the way Quanzo coaches are two different things. I'm interested to see how successful Porter is. He was named a preseason AP All-American. I'm not convinced Missouri is going to be good enough, and he's going to have the overall stats to validate that. But we'll see. Now, if they come up short of the tournament, I think that Martin should be criticized because of how good the roster will be. But we can also have realistic expectations about all this stuff, because let's remember this team was just absolutely dreadful.
They've been dreadful for a few years.
And for a few years, but yeah.
Last year, woof, they were bad last year.
Last year, in their Midnight Madness, their coach literally came out of a coffin. Yeah. And then some brilliant mind decided to reverse that and put him back in the coffin. Yes. If. Yes. And so, like, every time Missouri lost, it was so morbid. I think Missouri makes the tournament. That's where I draw the line. So Florida, A&M, Kentucky, Arkansas, Bama, Missouri. 6 SEC teams to the tournament. Vanderbilt made it last season. I think they're just going to miss. I think Georgia's right behind them, and I think Mississippi State's not that far behind, too. Then I've got Ole Miss, Auburn, which is has two of its 4 best players currently indefinitely suspended amid this FBI stuff. It was another team that had an assistant coach. Chuck Person, the Rifleman. Cannot believe it. Got hit in the sting, man. Auburn takes a dip with the loss of both those players.
Are they going to can him? This is his fourth year, man. If they don't make the tournament this year and they're getting caught up in this stuff and they're still not winning, what are they like? I'm looking here. They're 16-38 in the SEC the last 3 years. Why would you keep Bruce Pearl around if he's going to cause you this sort of trouble and you can't win anyway?
Certainly something to it, man. You're absolutely right. If Auburn finishes where I have them, and that's 4 from the bottom, right above South Carolina, I'll get to them in just a second, Tennessee and LSU. Yeah, you could certainly start over, especially because like the athletic director's on his way out. You could just kind of do a whole like, no. We're starting new. Changing everything here. Everything's got to go. I could see that happening. We'll see with the Bruce stuff, man. It's I think if he does get canned, I don't know if he ever coaches. I mean, he might coach again, but if he's got a spot with him, he's worked at ESPN before, like. He might just do
after the stuff. Iowa stuff at Illinois 30 years ago, he shouldn't have been allowed back in the first place. So seeing him fall is there's no one. Even Bob Knight is more popular in Champaign than Bruce Pearl. So
yeah, fair. South Carolina made the Final Four as a 7 seed, and it was shocking, and it was awesome, and I loved it. But they lost Sindarius Thornwell, who was the most valuable two-way player in college basketball last season. People didn't realize that until South Carolina did his thing in the tournament. But then P.J. Dozier left. Dwayne Notis is gone. There's some pieces back from that Final Four team. I just happen to think this team is going to take a big dip. Frank Martin will probably prove me wrong, and I'll look like an absolute idiot. But just wanted to note there that I've got SEC, in the SEC, South Carolina just taking a humongous drop. I take no joy in it. But the one thing that I try and stay aware of every preseason is that there are teams that take big drops and teams that take big jumps. It happens every year in college basketball. There are so many teams, it is inevitable. And so it's always, so these fan bases that are expecting to be top 50 or top 40 quality, and then I rank them in the 70s, 80s, 90s. I'm wrong sometimes. That's as is my right, but I'm right sometimes too. And you just can't stop it, man. You just, there will be teams that we, like, for all we know, like, I'm saying Florida's going to win the SEC. Maybe Florida's just average garbage, and there are 9 seasons coming. That is the fun of sports. That is the fun of college basketball. We always have to allow ourselves to be surprised by these things, and I think the SEC will have plenty of surprise to it, because it's also, in my opinion, the toughest conference of the major 7 to project.
Wow. Okay, last question on SEC. Of course, I have to ask about Georgia. I like Mark Fox. I think he's actually got a pretty good recruiting class. Rayshon Hammonds, I think, is pretty solid. I think the problem is they relied too much on scoring for J.J. Frazier last year, and they don't, like, unless Turtle Jackson pops up or Crump pops up, I don't know if they have the backcourt in a league where they're going to need a lot of backcourt.
I think this team is badly, the reason why I have them so low is I think they're badly, not just specifically the backcourt, but Frazier. I think, even though he was not as good last season as I thought that he was going to be, like, I thought he was going to really be fantastic, and he was just merely pretty good. Not having him, I think, is a huge loss. I think Maiden will still be pretty good despite that, because a lot of times you'll have certain big guys who just simply benefit by the fact that you've got savvy backcourt, guys who know how to run an offense and how to utilize the big men and are able to use a coach's scheme so well that less is asked of power forwards and centers in terms of what they need to do within the scheme of an offense. It's more like pivot players, so to speak, and they can really benefit. I think Maiton's a little bit better of a player than that. I think he's good enough on his own that he should have a pretty outstanding season overall. I am interested to see, I was looking before we were doing our player rankings, he shot more three-pointers than I thought he did last year. Like, he wasn't a go-to guy, but he shot, like, I think 2 a game or something like that. I want to see if that becomes more of what he does this season, or at least early on, because again, when you look at what's going to be asked of this offense with those guards, do they want to just add that element of having Maiton be just an occasional outside threat? Is he going to take, say, 63s the season, 65 threes, and will he want to do that for his own NBA draft stock as well? With big men now, this is more and more of a thing. I remain intrigued by that overall. But as for your hometown Bulldogs, I'd say 18, 19 wins. Not 18th or 19th in the country. I'm sorry, Lindy's.
Does that get Fox fired, do you think?
To me, that's a tough one.
It's 7 years. It's 7 years, one tournament, no wins.
That'll be the record, the rap sheet. No, he's made more. Hasn't he?
No, I think he's only made one. I gotta tell you, I think they because they got Michigan State in that first round.
I thought I remembered.
Well, let me look it up.
Having gone to one, and then he made one, and then it was like, well, he hasn't just made one. I thought he.
Since I've been here, I've only been here 4 years. So let me look it up while we're doing
two. Because okay. I remember he had made one. And then they squeaked in that year when I thought they had no business being into the tournament.
You remember this? Yeah, well, the year that you thought they had no business being in the tournament was the year they got Michigan State in the first game and got drilled. Yep. The Michigan State team that was underseeded. Okay, you are correct, of course, as always. They lost to Washington in 2011.
Okay, so he has been twice.
He's been twice, no wins. So,
twice, no wins.
7 years.
Man, I think if they... Again, how this happens also matters. Fair or not, the way the season goes, the kind of wins you get, how you get them, who they come against, who you lose to, where you fall. Like, if the middle of the SEC is just a morass and Georgia's one of five interchangeable teams, maybe he hangs on for one more year. I will say Mark Fox has his job at Georgia 1 year from today. I think I said that exact sentence last year on the podcast, by the way.
Yeah. And listen, I hope I like the guy. I hope he keeps his job. But I know that there are rumblings brewing is probably the best way to put it. Okay, let's finish up with the Big Ten. I know the story of last year was Northwestern, in that the main takeaway from Northwestern was that they lost to Illinois twice.
No, you love Northwestern Wildcats. I know that for sure.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't remember anything else that happened last year. I just know they lost to Illinois twice. It didn't beat Illinois at all. That's all I know from last year. I blacked out the rest of it. Of course, the big narrative of the Big Ten is always they have not won a championship since that Michigan State team way, way, way back in the day. Does this Michigan State team give them their best chance they've had in a while?
Yeah, it does. And there's been some really good Michigan State teams over the years that haven't won the national championship, but nevertheless got to a Final Four. Even a couple of really good ones that didn't get to a Final Four. This one seems to have everything. Not just Miles Bridges, the favorite to win player of the year nationally. Not just a really strong sophomore class, the best in the country, in my opinion. Josh Langford, Nick Ward, who was great as a freshman, and I do mean great for what he was expected of him and what he ended up doing. Really efficient. Cassius Winston, who I think will be who I said when he was committed to Michigan State, this will be a terrific 4-year point guard for the Spartans. Absolutely. They got all that, but they also have returning veterans, guys who missed last season, Gavin Schilling, Ben Carter, big men that they're going to need. They've got size. They're going to be able to rebound well. They've got athleticism. They've got shooting on the outside. They got Matt McQuaid. It is really, for me, of all the teams you want to pick to win a national championship, given all the circumstances of college basketball right now, it is harder for me to refute Michigan State versus any other guy. The one thing I do wonder about, everyone is so in on Bridges, and he's going to be really, really good. I wonder if the expectations are just a little too high for this kid. You know, you get the sense that he'd be this top three NBA pick in last June's draft, and now he's going to come in and average 24, 10, and 7. Like, it's going to be awesome, but he's got really good players around him, so he's not going to need to be like this outrageous stat monster. Like, I think Miles Bridges can be the leader on this team and yet just average 15, 7, and 3, and maybe a block and a half, and maybe a steal. Like, then that's going to be good enough because there are so many good players on the team. I think Michigan State is the definitive runaway favorite in the Big Ten. Then I've got Purdue, who loses Caleb Swanigan, who right there, player of the year last season, and yet they're the number two team because everyone else comes back. And Vincent Edwards is going to be a freaking baller, man. This guy is going to have an awesome season. Way high on him. This really good three-point shooting team. Like, they are going to have a lot of really good moments this season. I think Purdue has got a strong shot at like a 3 seed, which is even better than last season. It's going to be a weird quasi-Ewing effect, I guess. I don't know. To quote a decades-old Simmons term there. But Purdue should be really good. I do have Northwestern going third. Scotty Lindsey, Bryant McIntosh, Vic Law. And you are so pumped.
Well, listen, maybe they'll beat Illinois once this year because they didn't last year.
They are going to beat Illinois this year. Well,
they didn't last year.
They will this year, I promise you. I know. This is the – and I do this 1 to 351 ranking of every team in the sport because I'm a madman. But in accordance with that, we always – I think it's going up like today when we're publishing this. But we do like the best team in every state just because it's
yes.
A graphic with all the logos. It's easy to share for social. This is the first time in Northwestern history where it enters a season as the best team in college basketball in the state of Illinois. It's never happened before.
And this is the last time. This is the last time it happens.
Probably true. But they got enough coming back. They're fairly talented. It would be interesting to see if this goes the opposite, though, with this team with so much expectation. Like, they were expected to be good last season. And they were expected to make the tournament last season, in my opinion, going in. But if they don't end up being that good this year, that'll be pretty intriguing. But I think they'll be good. Minnesota is 4. Maryland is 5. Both will make the tournament with these. I think I'm higher on Maryland just about anyone. I think it's a top 30 team in college basketball. Like Michigan State, they've got a strong sophomore class. Remember the name Anthony Cowan. He's going to be a breakout sophomore point guard. Kevin Herter, Justin Jackson were really good as freshmen as well. I've got Wisconsin in the unusual position of sixth. Wisconsin.
Well, I can't believe you're doing this. This never happens. This never happens. They always finish. They always, always, always finish in the top.
They're always in the top four. They have not finished in the top four since, I think, 2001 it happened. But they've also never had – now, listen, they've got Ethan Happ, who's going to be probably a second-team All-American, if I had to guess. Maybe third team. We'll see. He's going to try and start shooting three-pointers. We'll see if that even works. But no Bo Ryan, Greg Gard, the roster's totally his. New backcourt, a lot of turnover from last season. Yeah, I don't think you'll find many people picking Wisconsin in the top four this season. But I will say this. If this team – all right, I'm not going to say never again, because if they have like this like ridiculous graduating class and there's a whole bunch of freshmen, then I probably won't do it. But if this team finishes top four in the Big Ten, I will never again pick Wisconsin outside of the top four so long as it has
– that streak going.
Top 30 player in college basketball.
Okay.
This team really has no business in this league finishing top four of the season. But the way it happens is if Northwestern and Minnesota play to their historical level, I guess, if you want to say, and if I end up, you know, overvaluing Maryland or something like that, and then Michigan and Iowa, who I have right behind Wisconsin, play to where they are as well. A couple quick notes here before we get to I've got Indiana pretty far down the list here. I think I'm going to be wrong about this, but they got Robert Johnson. They got Colin Hartman. They got some solid pieces back there at IU. I just think this is going to take a year for everything to click into place. So I don't think that the Hoosiers are even going to sniff the NCAA tournament this season. Ohio State made the really weird decision to fire Thad Matta, and then its athletic director in June was basically like, yeah, was not satisfied with the direction of the recruiting, and people are negatively recruiting against my coach, and like people are claiming Thad Mata's dying, which is just like terrible. Also, like, it's what gets back to that. I really hope that didn't happen, but you'll often find that some scuttlebutt on the recruiting trail, one way or another. You know, it's a real business, and negative recruiting can come back to bite you, but oftentimes you can one way or the other. So they get Chris Holtman in from Butler. It's not a good Ohio State team. It's going to be as bad as it's been in a long, long time. That backcourt is the worst team by far, by far. So I got the pretty low on the totem pole. I have Illinois finishing
11th. You are history's greatest monster.
Well, where do you think they're going to
go? Well, we'll get that in a second. 10 Miles has got to be gone, right? Like, this is it. Like, I think there's no coaching. And I liked him. Everybody likes 10 Miles. But I feel like there's no coach in college basketball that's in more danger than Miles.
Miles seems to be in definite danger. That staff has a lot of confidence that this team is going to be far from the bottom in the Big Ten. Again, maybe we'll be surprised and they'll finish seventh and we'll be like, what on earth? But there's nothing on the roster to suggest that's going to happen. If you're looking in this league, Miles' job is in jeopardy and Chambers at Penn State. Those are the only two in the Big Ten who entered the season with any real or any sense of any sort of job and security overall. Penn State, again, if they make big improvements, maybe Chambers will hold on to his job. If they're steady or worse, then I think they'll probably make a change there. He's on year 7 or 8. Yeah. They haven't made the tournament. So at least like Fox has gone to the tournament. Yeah. Nebraska's been to the tournament with Miles as well. I think they have. Yeah, they made it.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I'm almost positive they did. So yeah, I would think that. And Miles is. He's a solid coach, and he's well-liked. He will, I would think, be able to get another job. You know, if not next season, the one after that, he will have plenty of calls to do some TV work, if not, because he's just
he's great.
He's wired differently, my man. He is a different kind of cat.
All right, so Illinois, first off, we'll figure out this year in a second. Long-term, putting aside the FBI thing, because we don't know what's going to happen with that, because the system was there. I mean, I don't know. You tell me. But like to me, I mean, you know, I don't understand how unless there's like a smoking gun of Underwood saying to his assistant coach, go do all this stuff. I don't know why Illinois. That feels like one of those things. Like people always are leaving their problems behind at the schools they were before. Right. That's what always happens. And their players get it would seem a lot for Illinois. There'd have to be something pretty bad for Illinois to have, or unless they got banned or arrested or something. It's hard to imagine that, right? I mean, am I crazy?
No, yeah, that's fair. Now, for anyone to have any sort of skepticism with Underwood, I think is also fair at this point, because when you have an assistant charged in this and it's where you were. Now, for those who are not up to date on all things Underwood, Oklahoma State, Illinois, Underwood was just, he wanted a better deal than what he initially got. And the AD said that they'd have those discussions. They didn't happen. Underwood's agent did what he had to do. There was an opening in Illinois, and the deal was a lot better, and Illinois is a better job than Oklahoma State. So Underwood made the right move. He got out, and now he's got a really good situation, and this could be his lifetime gig. Long term, I told you, I definitely think if Underwood is cleared from all this, and he is fully safe in his job going forward, he can win a national championship at Illinois. I think he's that good of a coach, and he is that set up to succeed. As long as he's got the right guys on staff and he's able to, you know, the all important thing is to recruit Chicago. Although, you know, that city always has talent, but it also comes in.
Did you see the weird thing that happened with Taylor Horton Tucker?
You know what? I did not read it. I was like,
so basically what happened, but this is how weird Chicago is. They got Io DeSumi or whatever. They're the same thing. They got him for the McIrvin fire. And so then Taylor Horton Tucker wants to go to Illinois, announces in Chicago that he's going to be at the Jordan store and he's going to announce his team. Everybody knew it was going to be Illinois. It was going to be Illinois. He wanted to go to Illinois, but he's a Chicago Simeon, and the McIrvin people and the Chicago Simeon people don't get along. So because Illinois had just signed Io, who is the guy they really, really wanted, Taylor Horton Tucker was a compliment to that guy. Because of that, Illinois didn't want to, they said, if you get him, you're losing Io. So basically, Illinois had to pull an offer to a guy who was literally had an Illinois hat in his hand at the Jordan store in Chicago to announce it. It just and he ended up going to Iowa State. It just reminds you, man, Chicago is so gross. Like, it's just, to me, you say it's gross. I think it's actually, they're just protecting their guys. Like, I get it. I understand it. But it's just a reminder of how much of a mess that is.
It really is.
It made Illinois look terrible because, I mean, he wanted to go there. Illinois wanted him. Everything was set, and then they pulled the offer. Illinois pulls the offer to not upset the McIrvin fire, which, again, in the macro sense, generally has more talent than Chicago Simeon does. But, hey, also, Illinois has Chicago Simeon history. Deion Thomas and Nick Anderson and all of these great players, and Bryant Notre, and, of course, that was the 40 for, the 30 for 30 about Ben, the player that was killed in Chicago in the 80s that was going to go to Illinois.
Oh, gosh, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah, that's the Chicago Simeon. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Like, that's, yeah, he was a Simeon guy. They all were 25. It's this big connection between Illinois and Chicago. And then they had to pull it because of the McIrvin fire. And it's just like, if Underwood needed a quick primer on what it's going to be like recruiting Chicago, that was definitely it. Because it was definitely pretty gross. My thing with him, I've got Mark Smith fever. I'm very excited. I'm very excited by him. Mark Alstork is supposed to be almost like kind of what Rivante Rice was a couple of years ago, where you bring the transfer to come in. But he was a guy that was supposed to be the Horizon Player of the Year coming into this year, and he's been terrible for Illinois in all of their games so far. That's the to me, the path for an Illinois tournament is they have a pretty easy early schedule. Their ACC, their Big Ten Challenge game, ACC, is at Wake Forest. They're at UNLV. They've got Missouri, obviously. But they've got a manageable early schedule, even though that now the Big Ten, because of the Big Ten tournament, has games in December. They have to play Northwestern and Maryland in December because of the weirdness of the Big Ten tournament, because they're having it at the Garden, annoying to everyone except for those four Rutgers fans that still love it. But other than that, that the path is Alstork and Laurent Black and Michael Finke and the older guys get them through this early part before Mark Smith and Demonte Williams and the young guys take over in the back half. That's, to me, is the path. The path is basically Oklahoma State last year. That's the path. A terrible start, and then you get hot at the end.
Yeah, they don't have.
You obviously agree. Thank you. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah. Here's my question for you: is this hiring, like, do you think the Underwood hire for you, barring like something ridiculous happening and like Underwood's like gone at the end of the season, they hire someone next season, right? So let's say Underwood's just like, let's just say he's there for 4 years or 6 years, right? And I'm wrong, and it just is. Like, do you think this is the last Illinois hiring of your lifetime that you'll have, like, genuine energy to, like, build up and do this again? Or do you think that you'll just have this for as long as you're alive because it's your alma mater that, like, every time, hopefully it's only, like, two more times ever, but, like, that you get a new coach Like, you'll just be like, all right, here we go. Here's what I need to know about this guy. Here's how I can get psyched up about my program. Here's why I'm all in. Here's why there's reason for optimism. Do you think that's going to be endless? Or do you think, like, because of what Illinois has done over the past 10 years or hasn't done, you're kind of just like, all right, please just let this be the guy. Because if it's not, like, can I really do this again when I'm 43?
Yeah. Well, that's a larger question. Like, why am I wasting all of my time watching all of these games?
Dude,
the world is falling apart around us. Why am I spending all this time watching games? That's the larger question. But for when it comes specifically to Illinois, part of the Illinois problem too is, you know, they had Bill Self spoiled them, frankly. They made Bill Self made Illinois feel like it was the top 10 program that they have always felt that they are, and every step since Self has been a step down. Weber obviously had the great year, but it was with Self's guys. He had trouble recruiting. There were lots of issues with him. So they got Gross, and this was the old athletic director who wanted to do the upgrade from the MAC program. Gross is now in Akron. You got excited about Gross just because you felt he's a young analytical guy, and that's what they need. And each coach has lost a little bit of that, of what Self kind of left them. So to see someone now who has both experience and is on the upward swing, is a guy that like he's done, unlike Gross, because Gross was on the upward swing, but really he just got hot in the tournament that year at Ohio. So he was a hot kind of commodity. Underwood is a guy that shows inventiveness by the athletic director, which he also showed with the Lovie Smith hire. And it's shown creativity, and it's shown a guy who has experience with Illinois. Remember, he was assistant at Western Illinois for a long time. He's always talked about how Champaign was always a dream job for him. To be fair, he said that about Oklahoma State. But I do think that I'll put it this way. If Underwood doesn't bring the program back to where – I mean, music – every Illinois fan listening to this that heard you say – he can win a national championship of Illinois. That's the coach they want. Like that's what they feel they deserve to be. They have the most Final Fours of any team without winning one. They this is a dream denied that people will talk about that 05 team forever. Like this is a program that deeply, deeply cares about his basketball. The thing that worries me is if Underwood stinks, or if Underwood doesn't get it back, or if the FBI stuff comes and hammers that. I feel like he's like the last, like, okay, now I want to believe. And I feel like you can still believe if they can't get together the next 5 years, then you have to just kind of accept that you're Iowa. You're Iowa at best.
That's
sad, right? But like, no. Yeah. I mean, Illinois should be, like, honestly, look at the Big Ten. Teams that should be on a year-to-year basis better than Illinois in a macro sense. Michigan State, yes.
Yes.
Indiana, yes.
Yes.
Ohio State, maybe.
Yes. No.
Ohio State recently, yes. But I'll give you Ohio State. And Michigan, maybe yes. Other than that's it. That's it. Maybe Maryland, probably not Maryland. Like Illinois should be right there with them, right?
The league is loaded with really good programs, like really good jobs and really good programs, which are two different things. But if you're an Illinois fan and you want to say, like, no, it shouldn't be Ohio State, screw you, Norlander. Like, we should be the number three program in that conference, unquestionably. Like, I don't fault you for having those level of expectations. Just be aware of how good the league is now and how difficult it can be to recruit the third biggest metropolis in the country.
We saw this when North Carolina State last year, right? Like North Carolina State, I remember you listening to you in Paris talk about how they had the most unreasonable expectations of any fan base. And you look at North Carolina State thinks they're Duke, they can compete with Duke of North Carolina, and they can't. And for me, I would argue that Illinois may have somewhat overinflated views of what its basketball team should be doing considering recent history. But considering advantages, considering what they should be doing, I still feel like Illinois should be a top 15 program. And for me, Underwood is, if it's not Underwood, I might accept that I'm wrong and they're not a top 15 program and they're Iowa. Like maybe I need to accept
that.
Well,
that's a big drop off though. Like, yeah, I see what you're saying, but like,
okay, they're Purdue.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be it. We'll see. Like right now, you didn't ask me this, but like if you took a snapshot right now, and it's not just like what the team was last year, the year before, but like, let's just say the past 5 years and projecting the next 5 years, if that's what we're going to use to say, where are you as a program? Like, how do you rank? I think Illinois is a top 40 program right now. And at its ceiling, it's top 15 at its ceiling, but can you hit that and can you sustain that? think with Underwood, you've got a shot. The only thing that, and we are getting so far ahead of ourselves.
Yes, yeah,
Underwood doesn't get a ton or whatever. The job will always be appealing. So you're always going to have candidates that want the job because it is a better job than it is a program. I think ultimately it's always going to be chasing that. I don't know if it's ever going to match that. Similar to Maryland. Maryland's always going to be a better job than it is a program. And so when you take that into account, at least you're never going to get caught. Like we mentioned Nebraska before. I can't speak to the dynamics of that job now, but I know like what Nebraska was viewed at in 1996, it's viewed at in 2017. This isn't going to be anything where like Illinois is just going to just plummet to the bottom of the Big Ten and then it's not going to be viewed as a top 50 job. It is always, always going to be a top 50 job at its absolute worst. So you're always going to have interesting and good candidates that come knocking whenever there happens to be a coaching change.
Well, all I can tell you is they're going to not lose to Northwestern again this year because screw those guys. All right, Norlander, as always, this was a wonderful podcast and you indulged me.
I went too long. Always. I want to give a thanks to the listeners that always claim that they enjoy this one because I do enjoy doing it. This one and the pre-tournament one. It is an honor to be able to join you on this. Will, you're so diligent with this podcast. You do a great job with it, man. I am a subscribed listener and listen to many of these podcasts. So for you to take the time out and give me the chance to chat you up with some hoops, it's always appreciated. And listen, hopefully we'll be able to cross paths, this season because you've got a ridiculous streak going of not basically not hanging out at the Final Four. I saw you at the Final Four when they weren't letting us take out different sized, I think non-logoed Powerade cups, like generic Powerade.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, hey, Will, what's going on? I was like, yeah, they're not letting us go out. And then apparently, like, I just bailed on that. And you're like, you texted me like, no, they let us through eventually. I was like, whatever.
Jason Gay from the Wall Street Journal has written some great pieces about the dumbness of the NCAA stance on cups at games. But I think he had like a little cute little cat mug that he wanted to take it.
That was.
Yes. But no, listen, I will be in San Antonio. I will be in San Antonio. I've never actually been to the city of San Antonio before. The problem is I've told you that I'm hoping you're going to come back to meet me a little bit on this because you have children now. So you guys aren't going to go out. Like, I think Paris drags you out really late. And I can't hang with that. So
I know. All I'm saying is come out for a dinner.
Okay, I can come out for a dinner.
You say that now. We're going to record the next podcast in March. I'm going to remind you of this.
I'm in. Well, one of the problems, too, is I often sneak in. Like, for example, this year at the Final Four, I snuck in opening day. And I snuck in, like, a hockey game because we were in Phoenix. This year, there is nothing else going on in San Antonio that weekend.
Plus, you're going to have no excuse because I've never been to San Antonio. But the thing they say is like it is ridiculously walkable. So we'll only be able to stay unless you're doing an Airbnb. Like you'll be within like three blocks of me.
I am doing an Airbnb, but it is within two blocks of the stadium. So I'm there. Come by, host people at the Airbnb. I haven't looked to see if it has parties, but just bring everybody by. We'll all just go do shots. I promise. This is my solemn vow. We will remember it in our tournament preview. We will meet at the Final Four this year.
I look forward to corresponding on the tweet machine here going forward with Illinois and all things college hoops, man. Always great to chat, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yep, Friday night. I am ready, Friday night. I will be watching Bryant play Georgia and then Southern play Illinois, but that's okay. It's still the excitement of the opening night of basketball. Everyone, please follow Matt Norlander at Matt Norlander, MattNorlander. He has the best. He has work at CBS Sports as well. And you've got your movie, but you got your music podcast too. Give a little plug to the music podcast.
And I got it. Well, okay. Yeah. Real quick here. I do have a music podcast called Records and Riffs. It has been on like an unexpected, like indefinite hiatus.
That's right. Cause the shows are not the time. They're evergreens. You can listen to
them. Yeah, they are evergreen. Yeah. And I've got like five episodes I haven't uploaded, but now I have like a legitimate, like, podcast soundboard interface, got this office. I'm super inspired. So yeah, if you're into all that stuff, trust me, I'm gonna load up on up 2018, the year of the music podcast.
Yes, I talked to you for a long time about Nirvana.
It was still good to this day. No, fantastic.
All right, thanks, man. Everyone, enjoy the games. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a review on iTunes. Music is by the Haraway Brothers. Have a great week. Enjoy the games, Matt. Thanks for coming on. Bye, everyone.